Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Footbox podcast. And as you know, I'm Behram Kazi. You can find at Def Mango on Twitter. Once again, account is not hacked anymore. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And on this particular episode of Footbox podcast, it's a very interesting title. We've gone with Gen Z Powerplay Fields because we're going to be talking about how the, you know, Powerplay Fields have evolved over time and how, you know, there've been some disruptors in between, and it's gotten pretty funky in you know, the modern day. But Jared, I want to kind of dial it back a bit, right? And even before that, actually, you know, I have watched a lot of football growing up, and I'm a big Chelsea fan, and I've gone to Stamford Bridge as well. I don't follow it as much anymore because I work in cricket, but, you know, football formations are a big thing. And when you talk about managers and, you know, how styles of play have changed over the years and what sort of, is it total football? Is it Pep Guardiola's tiki-taka, Jurgen Klopp's, you know, rock and roll football? The formation kind of dictates what sort of approach you have towards, you know, your style of play. And similarly for American football, we know that there are playbooks and, you know, all players have to be well versed in them. Cricket has kind of slept on field settings that way, hasn't it? Like, we don't talk about it enough.
No, there's a couple of old coaching manuals. Coaching manuals that you would get with players that I remember. I can't remember who it is, but there was an old English player who said, this is a good field for an off spinner, and this is a good field for a leg spinner. And, you know, this is if you're swinging the ball away. But there's like five maps or six maps throughout the book. And you're like, I get it. It's a hard thing to think about. But like the field that you would set for someone who does sweep or doesn't sweep is very different. The field that you would set to someone who wants to stay leg side of the ball to offside of the ball is very different. And maybe it's because of the many different permutations that we have in cricket that we don't even really, like, there isn't really a field that you would set. So, you know, we all know 4-4-2. Right. And variations of 4-4-2. Right. So if you would say 4-4-2 and then you tell the player 4-4-2, they know roughly where they need to be at all times. Right.
Yep.
Whereas there isn't like a variation of that, that like, I don't know, the Australian team would have, or that another team would have, where they would go out in the field and they would be like, okay, we're going to run this formation for this batter. And we're going to run this formation for this batter to start with. And so we need Travis Head at back of square leg. Do you know what I mean? Like, there isn't.
Yeah.
We just never really got into that detail. And you played a little bit of club cricket, right?
Just a very tiny smidgen.
Yeah. Club cricket is such chaos. You go out on the field and you've got a lot of people who don't know what the fielding positions are to begin with. Yep. And like, the captain is sitting there having to make 9 decisions, right?
Yeah.
And people are walking in various things, and the old guys are walking towards the slips. And, you know, there's all these different, and there's one guy who wants to, I know it's better in professional cricket, and you will see now sometimes fielding captains do like symbols as if to say we need. I know Cummins does this one a lot, which I think is the deep backward point fielder, but I'm not sure. I can't remember now, but it's something to do with square of the wicket, right? But we don't really do anything like that, so we move all these fielders one by one, right? And we don't have names for the different fields that we have. Like bodyline leg theory is one of the few fielding positions that we kind of had a name for. But that wasn't one style. It was multiple different.
Yeah.
We talk about the ring field, but we don't really talk about like, well, is it 3 slips in a ring field or 2 slips in a ring field or all that sort of stuff. And it's fascinating because this all determines where people hit the ball and how they hit the ball, right? And whether quite often where the bowler bowls, right? Like if you give the bowler a third, so let's say 3 slips and a third, they will naturally bowl about half a foot wider than they usually do, right? So it dominates the bowler's thinking, the batter's thinking, all the fielders are involved, the captain's involved. It matters for the runs, it matters for the wickets. And yet at the end of it, Behram, none of us ever discuss any of it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, growing up, what taught me a lot about field settings was video games, because all of a sudden now you know what an attacking field looks like, what a defensive field looks like, and how field settings are different for spinners and pacers. All of that info, I kind of soaked in at a very, very young age because I was playing like Brian Lara or something, right? The OG games. And it's interesting how you also mentioned club cricket because no one would ever say fine leg. They would say 45. I don't know if you've experienced that or not, right?
Well, no, but that's part of the thing. Every cricket culture or even micro cricket culture will describe different fielding positions in different ways. So I walk out on the field as a cricket writer, someone who's played like, you know, 100,000 hours worth of cricket in my life, and I'll say, can you go to cover point? there's just a blank look.
Yeah.
Whereas if I, in, you know, whereas if I say, especially in English cricket, if I say go into the ring on the offside, they'll just sort of roughly be in the right area and then I can move them forward or whatever. And so you get all these positions where people don't even know. And as you said, you might get a 45, you might get a fine leg, you might get a long leg, right? And everyone, I've always said fine leg and long leg is the most confusing thing for cricketers. I don't know why cricketers have trouble with this. But the point being, again, is that they are slightly different. And we're not really, and we're not letting anyone know the full amount of it. Like, I would say outside of tea towels that have all the fielding positions in them, right? Like, you don't, you know, sort of joke novelty items. We don't really talk about this sort of stuff all that much. I remember we did have, we did something on ABC one time. I think it was, it might have been for a lunch break or something. It was me, Neil Manthorpe, and Jim Maxwell. We were talking about it, about how it's incredible how often even, you know, extra cover is something that really tricks people, right?
Yeah.
And you, so you've got cover point on one side, you've got extra cover on the other, and it's suddenly like, you know, a, something as simple as that really, really gets in people's heads. So you're right. I think the video games help. The problem with the video game fields is that it lets you understand how you have to use your field, but we don't play video games like normal cricket, right? So you end up with like four guys at deep cover or five guys on the leg side.
And
whatever,
when I'm
whatever
playing,
your shot is.
When I'm playing versus like the computer, I always overlap because I know that if I keep bowling here, they're going to hit in that exact same spot. So I'll stop the single and I'll get them caught out in the deep. So they aren't realistic fields. But that's also modern day video games where you can actually kind of place and place the fielders where you want them to. But there are limitations over there as well. Anyway, before we actually get into the meat of this, I actually just want to kind of ask you, how long have you been nerding out on field settings? This seems like something which has been happening for like a decade, minimum.
No, I became a captain of my school team when I was about, I might have even been 10, 10 or 11. I was year five. This is in primary school, so grade five. And I became the captain of the team. And sorry, I was vice captain, but the captain didn't know anything about, he was given the job because he was older. So he let me sit the fields. So I would try and think of each bowler and think about how we would do a field. And then I was also the captain of.
You were vice captain, but were you announced vice captain?
I think I was officially, I think there was a handover ceremony. We did a press release. The social media team got hold of it. And then the following year, I became the captain of that team and my under 12s team, I think at the same time. And so we, with my under 12s team, I think we had a bunch of guys who bowled outswing. So the field was pretty standard, right? You would probably have one or two slips early on. The two guys who you thought could catch it slip would go slip, right? And then fine leg, you know, and everything was quite. But for my school team, I had one guy who just bowled these big hooping inswingers, right? And like, I remember after the first game, my field was just useless. Like the opposition couldn't even bat, but they were just getting leg byes off him. And so I started scribbling down fielding plans for each bowler, right? So before a game, I'd show them to my dad and my dad would be like, just work it out when you're out there. And I was like, no, I can't. I need to know beforehand. And then I was a leg spinner, right? And my friend was my other, in under 12s, our other best bowler was an off spinner. So coming up with the fields for an off spinner and a leg spinner became a whole thing. I remember at like 11 having this huge fight with my dad and a bunch of old guys at the cricket club. Basically, they were like, you need a slip for off spin. And I went, that doesn't make sense. You're spinning the ball back in. And what they were trying to tell me, which I now understand, was it doesn't always spin, right?
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, no. Don't I need a leg slip? And you can imagine an 11-year-old going, do we need a leg slip? So it started when I was 11. So you're talking about like a 33, 34-year obsession with these kinds of things. And I've got an uncle who's really into it as well, who, especially when I was on ABC, he would be like texting me while I was on ABC, go, hey, look at the field. Look what they're doing. Right? Yeah. Like, so there must be something within, you know, a couple of us in the family that really cared about it. But yeah, it wasn't a normal thing. I remember batting at one stage in a game. And again, I was probably 10 or 11 and saying to the opposition, this is a terrible field for this bowler. Like, and the captain looking at me crazy. In fact, I used to have a blog about playing club cricket in England. And I went out and smashed like 35 or 15 balls in a game. And I wrote why in the blog. And I said, it's because they had a terrible field. Right, they had you'll know what I mean straight away. This guy was bowling left arm orthodox, pitching it on leg stump from over the wicket. Right,
okay.
So he was coming he was pitching it behind my pads and then spinning it across. And they had eight guys on the offside. Right, so I just walked. So he couldn't get me LBW. Right, so I just walked outside the line and paddle swept, slog swept, because all I had to do was beat the mid on. And I remember this captain commenting, going, this is not what happened, blah, blah, blah. And you just got lucky with some slogs. And I didn't get lucky, mate. You didn't have any fielders there. Like, yeah. It's not luck. And so I've always been more obsessed with that than other people. And even when I played cricket, my coaches would often come to me and say, you know, even when I was a junior or, you know, still finding my way when I was 16, 17, most coaches or captains would come to me and ask me about fields. That was always my obsession.
Nice. Well, that's a fun little anecdote and good little BTS, I suppose. But, you know, at the start or early days of limited overs cricket, for a while, you know, the power play field was quite standard. You would have a slip fielder, then you'd have, you know, protection at third man for edges, and you'd go with a fine leg for, you know, batters trying to work the ball off their hips, and pack the field in the circle on the offside with a mid-wicket or square leg or one of those guys in, right? Now, this carried on for a while, didn't it? Like, how long do you think, like, was it, what, 2 decades or something that this continued?
Yeah, the only funkiness we really had with those fields was probably the catching positions, because you remember you needed two fielders within 15 meters of the bat or a slip.
Yeah.
So that's the only real variation. If you go back and you watch old one-dayers, there aren't that many times when you don't just have a third man out and a fine leg out, but you would get... Maybe you might get two slips because you needed two catching fielders. Maybe you might get a short mid wicket, a short cover on a slowish wicket or whatever that may be. But yeah, as far as the field is out, and that's kind of what I was focusing on in this piece, right? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it probably was maybe even 2.5 decades. I don't really remember it changing pre-Sanaf Jayasuriya. I think around that period, we started to see, and he wasn't the only one who changed it, but you couldn't just, like Sanaf Jayasuriya, part of his skill was the fact that he knew what the field was going to be, right? And as long as he didn't get caught at third man, he could probably hit the ball over point and backward point and occasionally get an edge fine of third man over and over again.
Yeah.
And so you had to move where the fielders were for him.
True, true. And I mean, slowly yet surely you saw some minor tweaks coming in. And I suppose the first one was when fine leg became deep backward square and then you just had a short fine leg fielder. Would you say that's what, mid-90s, early 90s?
Yeah, it probably is mid-90s, isn't it? I would say that by the early 90s, we maybe saw it occasionally for some players. But by the mid to late 90s, it felt like it was more likely that you were going to see fine leg up than you were going to see square leg up, right?
Yeah.
And there's a couple of shots here. You get the... Dean Jones was probably a big reason that this changed, because he would walk across his stumps and flick the ball from full balls from off stump. And if you look back, that's what Viv Richards did. They just never put the field out there.
If you think of it from a batter's perspective, as long as you kind of even muscle the ball on the leg side, you know, by playing across the line, you are, you know, going to be very unlucky, I suppose, if you just find that one fielder on the leg side in the circle. And otherwise, you get some runs or even a boundary.
And there's like three different shots, right? So you've got the sort of Viv Richards, Kevin Peterson, Dean Jones flick across the line, which becomes really popular. Mohammad Azharuddin used to do it a lot too when he was in early. And then you sort of add to that sort of, I don't know, Colin de Grandhomme. No, not Colin de Grandhomme. Colin Munro plays it now. That sort of weird pickup shot where it's not really a pull, but it's kind of a pull. And Gilchrist, by the late 90s, is playing that all the time, right? Like he's picking the ball up from almost bail height and lifting it. Again, Viv Richards plays that shot a little bit. And then you've just got players pulling balls that they wouldn't normally pull in general, right? So even if the ball, you know, they're trying to force it away. So you've got three different, you know, areas there. And so deep backward square is really the first major change that you see. Whereas up until, I mean, it's hard to go back. You'd almost have to look at old footage, but I would say up until 1993, 94, it was very rare not to see a fine leg in automatically when you started. They might have moved it after a couple of overs if boundaries were coming, but certainly not for the first ball.
You know, I would have expected that this change should have come sooner, given how Australian batters love to pull and Asian batters are so wristy, right?
Their wrists, yeah.
Exactly. So you get both of those shots then, the flick and the pull. And so many batters throughout history have played that. So I suppose this came in a bit too late.
Well, I wonder if a lot of it is that this big boom in the field changes probably comes through Sanaf Jayasuriya, right?
Yeah.
And that's because he's scoring so fast that you have to react to it. Then you have Sachin Tendulkar scoring quite fast. You know, you're following that up with, you know, Adam Gilchrist and everyone else sort of comes in at that stage as well. Up until then, maybe it was like you were willing to, you're probably still thinking in your mind, that's a risky shot, right? Some of those shots. And they are. It's just that I think those players had I think looking back, Javed Miandad and Dean Jones were the two that probably should have changed the field. I know Javed Miandad's outside the power play and Dean Jones is a little bit inside and outside. But they were probably the two that should have done it. But you've got Chris Srikanth, you've got Mark Greatbatch, You know, you've got Gordon Greenidge. So it's not like no one's scoring a little bit quickly at the top, but they weren't doing what San Jose Sarria did, which is completely changing the way we think about the game. And so they weren't impacting everyone else's attacking shots. So maybe it's just a simple thing of it wasn't actually causing enough problems at that point.
True. I mean, you only kind of are forced to innovate when you identify that something isn't working anymore, I think. There's a phrase for this that I can't
David
remember.
I remember David Boone would turn the ball quite a lot to like deep backward square leg for two, right? And that was like one of his, like he wanted to cut everything David Boone, but the minute he got two straight, he would turn, he was quite good off his pads and he would turn it to deep backward square for two, but he wasn't getting fours or sixes, right? If he's getting fours and sixes off that shot, you probably naturally have to change your field. Where if he's getting twos, you're like, well, that ball still could hit middle and leg. With a chance if he misses it of an LBW. Whereas once Sanath comes along, right, they are fours and sixes. And that's probably the big boom that we saw.
Yeah, the need is forcing innovation, I suppose. But anyway, there are other innovations that happen and more disruptors, which we will talk about. But before that, let's take a short break. You're watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and go nowhere because we'll be back very shortly.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year. And I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You are with Behram and Jared, and we've talked about how to prevent the flicks and pulls within the power play. Fine leg became deep backwards square. And then after that, you know, the same thing kind of happened on the offside. Third man became like, you know, deep point, and then later and more recently has also now evolved into deep backward point, which you describe, or Aaron Finch describes, as the chop out man. So that's an interesting one, right?
Yeah, I remember me and Freddie Wilde having this conversation. Freddie Wilde is now the RCB analyst, I think. I think I've looked this up since I did the video. But I'm not sure if he's still the English analyst, but he wasn't the England analyst as well. Because I've known Freddie since he was a kid, right? Like, his old man is he's a cricket writer. And I remember when he first came on the scene and was writing blog posts. And so, you know, I've known Freddie for ages. And I remember we were both watching an IPL game. We were both tweeting about it back in the days when you could have conversations on Twitter. And I tweeted saying, when did this become a thing? This deep backward point, right? And he said, yeah, he couldn't work it out either. And what we both had kind of worked out, and we're both kind of obsessed by, that's why we're both analysts, right? Both kind of obsessed by these sorts of things, is it must have just been a thing that sort of carried through cricket very, very quickly. And it makes sense from a batting perspective, but it doesn't make sense from a captaincy perspective that it moves so quickly. But essentially, generally what you would do is you had the fielder out there for the ball that would be muscled towards deep point or even to cover point, right? So if you had that fielder at either right on the deep point boundary or even 15, 20 meters in front of it, you could kind of lock off a cover drive, and maybe the cover drive only goes for two, especially if it's not brilliantly timed. Or if they were slashing and they were going square, you would do that. But to get back to San Jose Sarria, because I think he's a really important person in power play fields in general, you go back to San Jose Sarria, the easiest shot, if you've ever played cricket, is not the really well-executed nail of a square drive or a cut shot. The really easy shot is just opening your face and slashing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what starts happening. So that fielder probably, again, to go back to the point we were making before, so many boundaries are probably, they've got the fielder out there. And they're like, no, the fielder's in the right position, but there are so many boundaries going out to that position because of this open face. And it's, you don't need the right ball. Whereas to hit the ball to point, dead square to point, or especially in front of point and cover point, you actually need to be, you probably need the ball to be in your area a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
Whereas we've seen Travis Head and Abhishek Sharma, and you can throw any modern players into this, right? Joe Root is brilliant at this. You can kind of just open your face and throw your hands through the ball, and you're going to get it to, you know, sort of between what gully and backward point would be in a test match field, right?
Yeah.
And so there's just this natural decline. So the fielder went from third to point or even cover point, and now has gone back sort of between the two.
Mm.
And that's the fascinating thing that I find that we don't talk about enough. And this is the first piece I've done on this. The other piece I want to do on this is about cover.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about this, but these things have been happening sometimes gradually and sometimes dramatically over time. And the players know about this, right? Like me and Freddie were talking about the chop out position about 4 years before Aaron Finch started giving it a name and people on commentary started mentioning it. It's really fascinating how we miss very obvious changes in the geometry of our fields.
I mean, they do say that if you slash hard, right? And what essentially you're doing with the chop out fielder is you're trusting that it will be not as well timed, the slash, right? And it'll just, the batter will hole out over there. But if I am to play devil's advocate over it, it's also quite likely that you just slash it above the short third fielder, right? That happens a lot.
Yeah, but if you think about it from that point of view, what are you now forcing? They can't just slash and slash hard because there's a fielder set for that, right? So unless you're Travis Head or Abhishek and you're going to get it over their head, the average player is now in a position where that's not always going to work for them. And if you're slashing, you're not in as much control as you would be over a cover drive or a punch to point. Right?
Yeah.
So you're bringing in potentially slip and short third, right? So you are actually bringing those fielders in, and then you're making the batter probably either move around the crease or manufacture a shot where they're trying to hit straighter now, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the gap. The gap now is, as I said, cover point, because the chop out guy should still be able to, unless you absolutely hammer it, should still be able to handle anything that's going to point, but cover point. So you're now making them manufacture everything. So rather than giving them the easiest, loosest shot, you're making them do a series of different choices. Or if they do the easy, loose shot, you now have two catches. I mean, how many times do we see batters get caught at short third early on in games, right? Like, it's actually a fairly common thing now. When short third first came in, it was so rare for someone to be caught in that position. So I think the combination of all those things is the fielding team is back on top a little bit. The issue now is that I think if you go back, certainly to the 90s and the early 2000s, you had players who probably had one or two shots in the power play that they could play. And now you look at Abhishek Sharma and Travis Head and you're like, there isn't really a place to put the fielders. Like, when Phil Salt gets going, you need a long off and a long on. He's also going to go out square on the leg side and he can slash on the offside. So where do you put the fielders anymore? Whereas if you go back to traditionally, players kind of had, you were lucky if you had three boundary zones in the power play, right?
Yeah.
And now you might have four. I mean, even Sanath, as good as he was, kind of didn't go down the ground all that often. He went square on the offside, square on the leg side. You knew he was going to hit a couple of boundaries or some sixes past them, but you also knew you could put the fielders roughly in the right area. Whereas the new Sanath, someone like Abhishek Sharma, it's like, well, he can do all that stuff on the square. He can also, he can play the short ball and he can hook and he can pull. He can also slog the ball from outside off stump to mid on or mid wicket.
Yeah.
And he can go straight, right? So where do you put those fielders now? And that's the real interesting thing over the next, 3 to 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think range hitting has a lot to do with this. And you see far more variety in release shots now amongst batters than, say, even a decade ago, honestly. Like, it's just been that rapid, right?
How much of it must be that analysis has changed batters subconsciously? As in, in the past, you knew that Mark Waugh or Mohammad Azharuddin was going to flick you off your pads, right?
Yep.
Or Sachin Tendulkar. Mark Waugh or Sachin Tendulkar in the power play was going to flick you off your pads. You put the fielder out at the deep backward square and Mark Waugh might try and hit a six occasionally or Sachin might try and hit it a bit straighter and, you know, sort of through forward square leg mid wicket sort of area or everything else. Whereas now, players are like, oh, they're going to set that field to me and it's going to be straight. Can I work on having an on drive that goes up in the air, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I know that both of those players could play the on drive, but now the player might be also like, so I've got an on drive to that ball and I can flick off by pads, but I can also say leg side of this and hit this inside out over cover, right?
Yeah.
And it used to be that players were, you know, you think of someone like Robin Smith, the English player, right? Or Nick Knight. Those are very high quality players, but they had like two or three shots they were absolutely brilliant at. There aren't that many players now that don't have that other shot. And the reason is because with Nick Knight, it probably took 2 or 3 years for everyone in world cricket to work out roughly where you had to bowl to him, right? And by then he was an experienced player and he was in the side and he had some runs behind him. Now, you know, you look at someone like Mohammad Harris, it took me, about an hour to work out yeah. what you can bowl to Muhammad Harris to slow him down. That doesn't mean Muhammad Harris is a dud and Nick Knight is better. Muhammad Harris might still have a higher ceiling than him, but he's going to have to work through that at 20, 21, 22, 23 in a way that didn't go through in cricket before. So if you're a player now, you're probably much more rounded in the available shots that you have. Like Kyron Pollard, I know this, he's not a power play player, but Kyron Pollard, if he was coming through the system right now, would sweep because he can't just rely on hitting the ball straight down the ground over and over again, right? He has to be able to play that other shot. And I think, in fact, of recent times, I think Kyron Pollard has swept a couple of balls, right? Like, and we're seeing Virat Kohli starting to sweep. You can't just be one-dimensional, which in the old days of the power play, I think it was quite a fair balance, the power play between the batters and bowlers. You look at the way players play now and you're like, is it a fair balance anymore or is it completely weighted towards the batting?
I mean, Abhishek Sharma is pretty much the perfect prototype because you see fields in which he has, power play field, sorry, in which he has two fielders out for him in the deep, sometimes both on the leg side or sometimes both on the offside. So you square the wicket, but you don't really know where to go. And it's interesting when you posed the question whilst doing your research for this piece to our group and you said you were like, who can you think of or what sort of funky field can you think of in the power play versus a certain batter in the modern day? And I came up with the Travis Head field where you have a deep point or chop out man along with a finer, you know, third man fielder. Not like the traditional third man fielder. I want this fielder to be like behind slip, right? Because that's the way like Travis Head kind of plays his shots. He will uppercut you and his edges are like different kinds of edges. But then again, even if I'm saying, okay, Trav, I'm going to bowl shorter length stuff to you outside off and either clear the boundary or get fucked, he can still kind of muscle me on the leg side, right? We know he can do that. He'll move around and he'll screw me over.
Exactly. And you think about that field. We've seen him go out to it before. We've seen him be caught at slip sometimes. We've seen him be caught at third man. Deep backward point, maybe occasionally as well, the chop out man. But how many times have we just seen him smash the ball through covers two or three times in a row when you try that tactic, right? Like, you're now, because once you bowl to that field, you have to bowl outside of stump, as you just said, right? So the best place to bowl to Travis Head is not outside of stump. It's the top of off stump. Right.
Yeah.
But you have to set that field because that is probably the most likely place that the ball is going to go. Right. That is where all either if he's middling it or he's edging it, those are the two places it's going to go. But as you said, if you're bowling anywhere near off stump, he's just going to take one or two of those on the leg side and you don't have anyone out there.
He and you have this punch other me. Thing. He could punch me. He could whip me. He could even, like, if he's really feeling in, you know, the mood, he could even go unorthodox, right?
And so he can go over cover or over mid-off from those same balls, or he can go over the leg side from the same balls. And then you've got the other thing is, and I've seen this with Abhishek Sharma and with Trevor said, where you have, I think with Abhishek Sharma, sometimes you have, like, a deep cover point or a deep point, and then you have the chop-out man. So you have two of them there, and you're bowling outside of stump. But because you have those two guys there, you cannot have a player who is catching at point or backward point or gully or whichever position you have. So when he mishits it, it just flies in a catchable position and you don't have them. And then you get slightly too straight to Abhishek Sharma and he doesn't even have to play a big shot on the leg side. There's no one out for him to beat. He just has to hit it and hope it doesn't hit one of the three or four fielders in the ring. And he's got another boundary on the other side. So it's become this dance that is really, really tough. And this is just pace bowling. We haven't even got into when spinners bowl on the power play.
We'll come to the spinners, but I just want to talk a bit about disruptors. You've obviously mentioned Sanjay Jayasuriya's name like three times, and he's similar to Head, only he probably went over extra cover a bit more, right? If you think about it. And the chop out fielder would also make sense for Sanath. But in your piece, you mentioned West Indian keeper batter Junior Murray, and he was different because Australia would have like a third man fielder for him because they didn't, you know, trust him to time everything and were confident he'd still edge it. And then they'd had like a three-quarter mid-wicket, if you will, because they knew that he hit all of his shots over there. But that's an easy one. If I am the captain and I'm seeing that a batter continues to play his shots over there, I'm like, okay, I'll just cover that area. I don't think there's anything like radical about that, for instance. But
and that's why I brought that one up, because it's not that we'd never had a single field change for a single guy. And I just remember that one really, really clearly because I think it was over three games. The first game he made runs and Australia's like, God, what are we going to do here?
Yeah.
And by the second and third games, they were like, well, if we put someone right here. So that's a perfect example of what we were just talking about, of a player that was limited and you could set a field to.
Exactly.
A few years ago, I realized that trying to find the best stories in cricket was impossible for any fan. I even tried to get funding to make my own cricket Huffington Post. It never quite worked. But luckily, we finally have someone filling this massive void in our game, Best of Cricket. They scour the publications everywhere to find, quite simply, all the best news and the greatest stories on our sport. Then they make it just as easy. They either email it or WhatsApp it direct to you. Cricket's greatest tales delivered to your device. This is truly the best of cricket.
But the one that really interested me was the Jason Roy one, right? Because now you're looking at a completely unconventional power play field, and it's come fairly recently if you think of limited overs, you know, cricket history. Jason Roy played not too long ago. And, you know, he was so good at swinging through the line of the ball, right? And that's why he was probably, like, at least to your knowledge, one of the first people or batters who opposition captains would have a long on for, and then they'd also have one fielder square of the wicket, right, on the leg side. And now, you know, you've got your Phil Salts, you've got other players, you pitch it up and they'll just take you on downtown. It might become more of a common thing going into the future.
No, definitely. And I think what Jason Roy did, even more than Sanchez Ria, is he changes the entire map, right?
Yeah.
Because before, what you have is you're moving your third and your fine leg square, right? Even the chop out guy, it's still roughly, it's a variation of what we had in 1975, right?
Yeah.
Like it's still very, very similar to 1979, whenever the circle comes in and all that sort of stuff. All that's from South Africa, by the way. That's all apartheid innovation. I don't know if people know that.
I did not.
Apartheid cricket innovation. Not saying the ruling government was involved, but they came up with the circle and the catches and all those sorts of things. Anyway, so from whenever that comes in, you have your fine and your third, and it comes around. So what we're talking about then is just making people square up because of the way that people bat, right? When you have someone like Jason Roy, as you said, I've seen it with Phil Salt. I think we've seen it with some other batters before occasionally as well. The actual geometry of it completely changes at that point, right? Because now the fielder who's out is straight and down the ground, and they are there for that hit specifically. And so now the square boundaries are the ones you can't defend anymore. And so that's what's so fascinating about that. And that plays into the Abhishek Sharma and Travis Head situation again, as we just said, because in their case, you kind of need two fielders on one boundary and then just try and bowl to that plan. Whereas in Jason Roy's case, you now have to bowl angled in at him as much as possible, because you've got one fielder out on the leg side probably, and then someone at long on. And that ability to just routinely hit the ball over the top consistently isn't normal, right? But it's becoming more and more normal that mid on and mid off are no longer just automatically in the circle. And so that, again, changes things quite dramatically.
Yeah, and white-hot England, I suppose, could be responsible for that particular innovation. But then that's not the only thing I feel that they're responsible for. Because for spinners, as you mentioned in the power play, generally you would have a fielder on either long on or long off, depending on where the ball is or what direction the ball is turning. And then you'd have a fielder square of the wicket as well, probably on the leg side to prevent the rock back and pull, right? Because that's something that batters love to do.
Or the sweep.
Or the sweep, exactly. But then you get white-hot England, who are sweeping and reverse sweeping the crap out of spinners. And now you get to see fields which have two fielders square the wicket for spinners. And that's something that the video games don't have, Jared, right?
And when I played the video games, that's why I perfected the reverse sweep all the time, right? Because if you could reverse sweep in those games, it's very hard for them to stop you with the field, right?
Yeah.
England was a big part of that. In fact, Jason Roy played a part of that, because when he was struggling against spin, it was the reverse sweep he went to. But England were certainly a big part of that in the power play. And then George Munsey is probably another player who, not particularly worldwide famous, George Munsey, but if you're playing Scotland and you don't know to put out a deep backward square and a deep backward point for George Munsey, he's going to hit three boundaries by the time you've realized your field is wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I have seen George Munsey do it against really good spinners. I've seen him do it against, associate spinners. He will just
I got one. Marcus Stoinis opening the batting in the Big Bash.
What do you mean? Sorry.
He could also do that, right? He could reverse sweep the crap out of you.
Yeah. Well, Marcus Stoinis is another player, by the way, who I've seen the Jason Roy field for. So when he opened for Melbourne Stars, I was like, unless teams work out to put long on or long off bat, Marcus Stoinis really can't be stopped, because he can mishit the ball three quarters of the way to the boundary every time. Marcus Stoinis is another example. So you end up in this situation where the you're now, and I've seen teams try all sorts of things against George Munsey. So I've seen them try two fielders out for the sweep, right? And he just plays the reverse sweep over and over again, right? So then they put one fielder out for the sweep. So now he plays the slog sweep, right? And the other man's out for the reverse sweep. And then the minute it's overpitched, he goes down the ground. Like, it really, again, it changes the dynamics of how you're doing it. And in Munsey's case, or Roy's case, or these sorts of reverse cases, that's one. But you see the same pattern happen with really good cutters of the ball, right? So in women's cricket, Meg Lanning is a perfect example of, you just need a deep backward square and a deep chop-out person for Meg Lanning. And if you don't, I was looking at her from 2017 the other day when Sri Lanka's bowling to her, and it's like she gets like a Yorker on middle stump, but she hits it through point. Right, like she's gonna go through point anyway, and you see, you know, a lot of Indian players in the IPL against spin will just leave their stumps completely open and just play these back foot punches through the line on the offside in the power play over and over again. You now need to do that. And in fact, I remember I was at a India A game. I think it was India A versus West Indies A, and I forget that a West Indian batter. But I was sitting there watching him, and Rahul Dravid was at that game, and I went up to him to ask him about the field. And I said, this guy isn't reverse sweeping. And he said, it's not about the reverse sweep, Jared. We cannot stop him cutting. We're bowling half volleys on leg stump, and this bloke's cutting them, right? So players are now evolving those sorts of skills. And once you have deep backward square out and deep point out, and you're in the power play, all you have to do is slog a spinner over the line, across the line. Like, you don't even need to hit them in the air, right? You can just keep swinging really, really powerfully, and eventually you're going to beat mid-off, mid-on, mid-wicket cover, whatever those fielders are.
That's a very interesting one, because it's kind of sparked a new sort of field setting in my mind. Because, you know, there are players of spin who are terrific at playing spin, but it's not like they have a vast variety of shots versus spin. They just continue to nail the same shots, right? Take Shoaib Malik, for instance, right? Fantastic player of spin, has a terrific record in Asia because of that. And if I have him in the power play, I would literally have deep backward point to, you know, eliminate his cut. And I would have a fielder at long off with a spinner which is turning the ball away from him.
Yep.
And that and might be that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, so Shoaib Malik is probably from that previous generation that was slightly more limited. It doesn't mean he's not a very good player, because you just said he was a very good player at what he did. But he's slightly more limited. So the question then becomes, Bayram, as players naturally become less limited, right? And that now becomes an evolutionary tool in batting, right? Of having four boundary areas. Like, if you go back, I know this doesn't help the power play argument, but if you go back, and I wrote about this a little bit in my book, The Art of Batting, out 8th of May, about Michael Bevan, right? Which is, Michael Bevan was playing one-day cricket in a way that no one else was. But we were all focused on things like the running between the wickets, the calculating, the getting to the last over. Michael Bevan's other big skill was he knew you could only ever have five players on the boundary. And he always felt that that meant there was one pocket he could score a boundary on. Right?
Yeah.
And so he thought about cricket from that perspective in a way that we weren't thinking about at that time. In those days, if you wanted to hit a boundary, you played your best shot and you hoped you either hit it hard enough or into a gap or over the top of the guy's head. So many players at the death would just swing to deep mid wicket. Over and over and over. You watch the late 90s ODIs, there's just a string of guys going out, caught at deep mid wicket over and over again. And Michael Bevan opens that up. And now that sort of Michael Bevan thinking is kind of how we think about modern cricket, right? Like, great. These are your two main shots. This is your get out of jail pressure shot. Where's your other boundary option? And once you get to that level, now we're at a completely different level. And then you have your six hitters like Heinrich Klassen and everything else. But for all the sixes Heinrich Klassen hits, where do you think Heinrich Klassen hits most of his fours?
Versus spin or versus space?
Either, I would say.
I would say maybe mid-wicket or covers.
I reckon if you get... Yeah, I reckon he hits his fours to backward point and third and to cover. And so he's like, those are the two places that if I just hit the ball really hard and I get it past the fielder in the ring, it's four, right? And if I'm going to hit those, but almost every other shot he plays, he's trying to hit a six, right?
Well, he also has those
big thinking.
He has those jabby pull shots as well, right? That's why I originally said
that's what I mean.
But I saw one of his innings in the Champions Trophy where he hit the same four through a packed offside field, you know, through the cover region. It was crazy, right? Yeah. He continued to do that over and over and over again.
And so you think about that. So he now has four shots and six shots, right?
Yeah.
And again, this is my piece is more about the power play fields, only because those are the easy. It's so hard. Once you get up beyond the power play, it becomes a little bit tough to kind of manage on my whiteboard, dude. But at this point, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? Which is this combination of all these different things of, can we get to a situation where we can really understand what they're trying to do? And I think now what we see is there are players who hit fours in certain regions and sixes in other regions, and they know exactly what that is. So again, when you come back to the power play, you might get a player who will hit the ball to cover three times in a row, right? Mm. And they're like, yeah, but the fourth one's going to be through you. And then the fifth one might get through you as well, right? And so we have that kind of style, which we didn't quite have the same back in the 90s and early 2000s, when players were a little bit like, oh, I've hit that ball straight to cover three times. Maybe I should go on the leg side and take a single here. No one's thinking that anymore, are they?
Yeah, and even if we go back to the Shoaib Malik example, it's very likely that he still hoicks me over mid-on, right? Or just nails the shot down the ground so well that the fielder doesn't matter. But at least you can kind of try to work him out. Whereas with these modern day batters, where they've got like such impeccable range, you really have to kind of think on your toes and sometimes even outside the box and play mind games, I suppose, at that level.
Exactly. But anyway, and I think that's the whole difference now. Agreed.
Yeah. I have a question of non-power play fields, though, just related to this. I see this obsession in modern day cricket that once the power play is done, captains will always opt for both a short third and a short fine leg fielder, and that annoys the crap out of me, right? Why do you think that's the case?
Can I take it a step further?
Sure.
Why are we putting all the fielders out straight after the power play every time?
I don't do that when I play my video games. I keep that same field.
It baffles me that, especially when you're in a good position after the power play, that you would want to release some of that tension, right? And also, what if you do have a player who's slightly limited?
Right? Yeah, but my point was, sure, I completely understand what you're saying. And you could continue to add, like you see it in test cricket, right? You're just continuously adding the pressure and you're being relentless with your fields. But given the way modern batters have now evolved and unorthodox shots are very common, right? They could ramp you easily. They could paddle sweep you, whatever. Why would you always have short third and short fine both at the same time? Have one of them. But why both? You can even spread out the field at this point.
I think I can tell you the reason for this. I actually don't think the ramp is played all that often.
But then you get edges, right? Inside edges and then outside edges, all of that stuff.
You do. But remember, it's also worth remembering that third and fine don't always stop edges. Right? Like if you get an edge that goes through second slip, good luck at being at third and you're going to actually, especially if anyone is bowling at decent pace, to be able to stop that. So, I mean, you're right. I think I worry about anything that's automatic. Does that make sense? So if you've got a situation where you automatically make a decision because the fielding restrictions have changed, I think you're not thinking about it tactically at that stage and you're just following the most obvious thing to do. That would be my agreement with what you've just said there, where I just look at it and I go, is this really what you want to do? But I do understand some of it and I understand why it's so popular. But yeah, I think your general point is correct, right? Like we're in a situation at the moment where we are not, what's the best way of putting it? Where we are not really maximizing our thinking, right? When the power play ends.
And we're I don't think we're proactively thinking as a sport around how different fields at different phases of the game can impact, you know, the batting side.
So one of my best examples is between over 25 and 40, we only have four fielders out in ODI cricket, right?
Yeah.
Batters are set at that stage, the balls are older and everything. But we have mid-on and mid-off up quite a lot, and we get heaps of catches to mid-off and mid-on up, right? No one has gone, wait a minute, why can't we try that in T20 cricket? Yeah. And not everyone hit, and we just said that people are more adaptable and have more shots at more different places than ever before. And I think that's undoubtedly true. It's still very rare for someone to have, especially against 90 miles an hour bowling or very, very high quality spin, to have five options to hit boundaries. Now, five options is, that's getting back to your Travis Head, Abhishek Sharma type guys, right? Like a normal player is probably going to have four options to hit a boundary off you, right?
Yeah.
Why do you need five players out? Mate, and there's no thought process behind this of maybe we can buy our wicket. And the other one is towards the end of the game where it's getting to a point where dot balls are really, really important and two or three dot balls in a row can create a bad shot. And no one ever brings it doesn't really happen until the last over that anyone ever brings the fielders in. So I think that we're still, and this comes back to why I did this piece and why I want to do more pieces like this, which is I don't think as a sport, we are truly at this stage thinking about the best use of our field because we don't talk about the best use of our field. It's only recently that we've really started having fielding maps on the screen consistently, despite the fact that we all grew up with them in video games.
Also, they disappear right now. I want them to stay on and I want them to blink. If someone has taken a catch, then tell me that this fielder has taken a catch, right?
I like that. I like that a lot. The other thing I would say is cricket writing and cricket media plays a big part to blame in this because quite often the field has built the wicket, right?
Yes.
And we never say, oh, one of the reasons that they're out here is because of this field. Well, I should say we rarely say it. And so there's no reason for Cricinfo or Crick Buzz, although they don't always have the fielding maps, but when they can have access to the fielding maps to be like, he was trying to hit, the reason he was playing the reverse sweep is because I had, you know, four guys out straight, basically. An extra cover, a mid-off, a mid-on, long on, long off, and mid-wicket. And so he played this shot and it looks risky, but the field actually played a part in him playing a shot that he doesn't normally play. We have to normalize actually explaining what happens. And I talked about pretty wild, you know.
Just one thing, sorry, just came to my brain. I don't want to lose it. You know how in modern day cricket, bowlers at the death are more often than not bowling hard lengths, right? Because they're afraid that the Yorker will go wrong and slot balls will always go for six. You could keep mid on and mid off if you're not bowling full. Right?
Yeah. And we sometimes see it, don't we? We sometimes see mid-off or mid-on up in the circle. But again, do you know what we don't hear, Bayram? The commentator's going, interesting here, they've gone with mid-off and mid-on up.
Yeah. Right?
So it doesn't always get, you know, until you see a guy try and hit the ball past mid-off two or three balls in a row, the commentators don't mention it. So they aren't including it in that conversation.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
How much would the betting market, or well, not the betting market, but bettors in general, benefit from having the field on at all times? Because then you can kind of predict one step further, no?
I think that probably helps. That's probably why major franchise, major syndicates in betting send people to the grounds, right? So, you know, on top of court siding, although it's hard to court side when there's 80,000 people in a stadium, but on top of court siding as a betting tactic, it really does actually help quite a bit to know where the field is and what the bowler is trying to do. And we're watching on TV and we don't know. And I think that's kind of where I want to get this conversation to, is getting us to the point of which, you know, so I said before, Nathan Lehman, you know, the England analyst, me, I can't remember if it was me or him, but I know it was in a conversation we're talking about together where we both sort of said the same thing, which is wagon wheels are incredible information, but they basically tell you where the field is not where.
Yes.
So it's like you have to read a wagon wheel going, oh, okay, so what happened here? Oh, they just never put a fielder in this position. And so he kept hitting the ball in the same spot over and over again. Whereas actually now there's probably ways through, you know, advanced math, advanced thinking. And also, as we just said before, what was the field before you went out and how did that play a part in the dismissal?
For instance, you know, every time there's a field change, I would love to see that little dot on the field map highlighted. And it moved to the new spot every single time. I would like to see that. And if a certain fielder has taken a catch, highlight that on the field map. I think this gives valuable information to not just like nerdy viewers like us, but even the casuals, right?
I see. I think this is more important to casual fans than it is to us, because we will eventually work this out, right?
Yeah.
We're going to work out. Like, I've done so much commentary over off the TV from Test Match Sofa all the way through to Cricket 8 Talk Sport. I'm so used to doing off the TV that you can kind of cheat, right? And you're like, you know, so there's ways, if you're not 100% sure of where the field is at that stage, because you haven't seen any changes, you'd be like, slashed away. There's a fielder out there, though. You only get one. You hear it all the time. This isn't the BBC do it for the IPL. So you have to have it each way so you can do it. So you pick this up. But how does a casual fan know any of this?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not, and this is the sort of thing of casual fan. I'm not saying every NFL fan knows about formations and routes and all this sort of stuff. But they do understand that there are, if you have four wide receivers, you're probably more likely to throw than if you don't, if you only have two wide receivers, right?
Similarly,
stuff like that.
In football, if it is a 4-3-3 or a 3-5-2, you know that the opposition team or whatever team will be attacking from the flanks. Their whole idea is go through the fullbacks and the wingers. It tells you a lot about what sort of football they're about to play.
And at the start of each over, I think we're doing a disservice, and I say this as a radio commentator as well, I think we're sometimes doing a disservice not really illustrating what the field is. And then, as I said before, when the wicket happens, Did the field play a part? Quite often it does. And, you know, I think there was a big step forward, and this is not about limited overs cricket, but I think there was a big step forward when I think it was Sid Mongo who first started calling it this, but it might have been someone else. The Wagner Field, right?
Right.
Giving it a nickname. Those things, like, there's a reason why we talk about baseball so much. It's because saying, England's accelerated runs per over strategy in test cricket is not, no one gives a shit. Baseball, right, makes sense. And so you have the exact same thing with the Wagner Field, right? And if we start to get into that sort of normalization of field, it's why I use the chop out, man. Because let's be honest, it is the backward point, and we all know what the fuck it is. But another let's one, call the chop out, man, because it's cool.
Absolutely, and that's what we're kind of doing with our advanced stats as well. The umbrella field comes into mind since you mentioned baseball, right?
I think umbrella field is a perfect example of that, and ring field, right?
Yeah,
some of the names that we do use actually make a lot more sense. And I would say that if you said to someone who doesn't know a lot about fielding positions, a ring field, I think they would more often than not, if they've got a little bit of cricket knowledge, put that together, right? And an umbrella field again, right? Wagner one, not as much, right?
But, yeah.
And chop out man, not at all. But but we can actually start to make this a little bit easier and everything else for it, because the one thing that we don't have a 4-4-2, right? In limited overs cricket, we don't have a 4-4-2 in test cricket. You know, we don't have it at all, but we can actually get towards different sort of situations where there's a shorthand. And these sorts of things really matter. I mean, I remember when the pick and roll became a big thing in the NBA, right? And pick and roll is such a huge thing in the NBA now. Every casual basketball fan has at least understands the concept of pick and roll involves two players. They may not know the exact geometry of it. They may not know the exact pattern of it and everything else, but they know that usually a big guy is involved and a little guy has the ball, and then something happens off that, right?
Yeah.
We don't really have as many of those in cricket as we need for people to understand this sort of game. And it's up to us as, like, it's all well and good for me to say TV commentators haven't done a good job and they should have the thing on the screen and everything else. But it's up to us as the media and podcasts and everything to normalize this so that it becomes something in the future.
Absolutely. And we might just be, you know, at the brink of this, given that we do now get those field max for a bit in the IPL. They aren't constant, but it is some welcome innovation, and I think it should be the norm. Hopefully it will be. But let's see how this progresses and whether or not cricket fieldings or field settings, they get to that level of complexity from a, you know, understanding the game point of view, not just for players, because it already is for that for them, but for spectators and analysts and casual fans alike. Anyway, that I think kind of wraps up this episode of the Footmarks podcast. Just a quick reminder, you guys can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll be back with you soon enough with a live show or a Quick Picks or a Footmarks, one of those. But that's all for today, folks. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.